Podcast. In conversation with musicians from the UK jazz scene. And now your hosts, Rob Cope and Dan Farrant.
Hello and welcome to the Jazz Podcast. It's episode 37. I am your host, Dan. With me today, as always, is Dan Farrant. How's it going, Dan?
Doing all right, Rob. How about you?
Yeah, very good. Everything's under control.
What's going on with your washing machine?
Oh, yeah. It's okay, fine. Everything is not under control. It seems that there's some kind of massive scale lime attack. That's taking her down. So... thanks to EU legislation, it's still under warranty, so rest assured, listeners, that a new inlet valve is on the way.
Good to know.
Yeah, that's good. So exactly, everyone can breathe a big sigh of relief now.
Yep.
So you're in Birmingham.
I am in Birmingham.
Where are you? Are you in a hotel?
I'm in a hotel.
Are you?
Yeah,
on
I had a late event last night, so
I see. I had to stay over. Well, do they pay for that? Of course, I assume.
Well, yeah, no, yeah, of course they do.
How's the breakfast in the hotel?
You know what? I didn't go for it actually because it was quite a late event, and so actually I slept straight through breakfast.
Wow! Oh yeah, man, that's I don't think I've ever slept through a hotel breakfast before.
Oh right, yeah, you're a breakfast fiend, are you?
Definitely a breakfast fiend. Yes. Mm.
No, I think I'll just go and get a coffee downstairs now.
Oh, that sounds so dignified.
On the train. Yeah.
Well,
what's going on with you, other than?
Yeah. Passed my motorbike theory test. That was pretty cool.
A cause for celebration.
Yeah. So I've got the next part of the license exam next week. Yeah. You have to You know, it's just what you hoped it would be. Like, do a figure of eight, do a U-turn, do a slalom, go around a corner.
Kind of like the Gran Turismo kind of tutorials.
Exactly those, yeah. If you ever played those games on the PlayStation. Yeah, the license exams, it's exactly that. And it's set up the same way. So when you pass it, you can write, you get like an A1 license, then an A2. You can get a bigger bike. Then you can get like the full like super license.
Nice.
Or the S for suicide license. So today Matt Hurd is our guest. And he sounds a bit like Ewan McGregor, which is just wonderfully satisfying. I like to pretend he's Ewan. Also the sound quality, it marks a new dawn for my interview recording powers, because we did it in a really busy coffee shop and it sounds pretty good.
Great.
Yeah.
We've come a long way since those first episodes.
Yeah, Stan. I know. The ones with Stan and Dave Green and Femi, they've got a vintage, rustic, low budget feel to them that we just don't have anymore.
Well, we've still got the low budget feel. Without the rustic.
Good point. Good point. Well played. All right. Well, let's check out Matt Hurd.
Let's do it.
Matt Hurd, welcome to the Jazz Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Rob. Lovely to be here.
It's a pleasure. We've gone to Cafe Nero in Richmond, and it's rowdy, big-time atmosphere, but I'm using all my Zoom skills to try and overcome such problems. So I tried to take Matt to the tea box, and before we got there, I described it as an incredibly annoying, overpriced coffee shop in which no one would go to, and therefore it would be quiet. But it's so bad, it's closed forever.
It is, yes. Which, never to be seen again.
No, it's tragic. So, anyway, let's talk about your life.
Okay.
Of your life.
Okay.
Where were you born?
I was born in Glasgow, in Scotland.
Cool. Whereabouts?
The middle of Glasgow.
Right.
In the Queen something hospital. Mary. It's not really.
There's no Margaret was the princess. I've been watching The Crown, so I'm really
Is there not a Queen Margaret? There's a Queen Margaret's Drive in Glasgow, so there might...
Oh, there must have been.
However, the Princess Margaret sounds so much more glamorous. So let's...
I can't remember what I was born in now. I think I was born in a hospital called Princess Margaret.
Where are you?
My mum will be listening to this.
I'll go for Queen Margaret, you go for Princess Margaret. I think it sounds much more appropriate, much more fitting.
Perfect.
Yes, so I was born there and I weighed 8 pounds.
Good one.
And I was a riot from the word go.
I bet you are. How long did you live in Glasgow for?
20 years.
So where did you go to school?
I went to school in a place called Bearsden Academy, which was great. It was okay. You have these fond sort of you have these sort of fondish memories of your childhood because nothing went catastrophically wrong.
Yeah.
But it wasn't great.
Yeah.
It was fine. Okay. I had a fine time.
Normal.
I had a normal, normalish time at school growing up as a teenager. it was okay. There were some hard days and then there were some good days, you know.
When did you first play a saxophone?
When I was 11 years old.
Why?
Well, I watched the Glenn Miller story.
I love that film.
It's a great film.
What's that guy's name? Cary Grant.
James Stewart. Cary Grant's the other one. it's just fabulous. It's James Stewart and June Allison and recounting in a fabulously kitsch sort of early colour film kind of way the life and music here.
That was one of the first colour films ever made.
Was it?
If not the first.
No.
The first. I have a good feeling there's something really historically significant about it. Because it was the big, you know, when there used to be film studios, like that was the big one that year, like the biggest budget.
The Glenn Miller story.
Yeah. I'm going to Google it
while
we talk, see what delights I can find. So you watched it.
I watched the Glenn Miller story.
Much like Glenn's epiphany about the saxophone, you were like, hello.
Yeah, well, I really wanted to play the trombone.
Cool.
Because of Glenn. I'm not sure if it was a music or my intense prepubescent attraction to James Stewart that did it, or a mixture of both.
Yeah.
But I really wanted to play the trombone, and I said to my mother, I have aspirations to play the trombone, and I think she told me to go fuck myself in not quite so many words. And then
Fair
settled
play.
For the saxophone. It was a bargaining thing.
Yeah. I realise.
Is it?
Can you move your phone?
Yeah.
I left mine that close to the Zoom once, and it was a disaster.
Make it go really bad.
It was horrible. So what happened to you in your trombone career?
My trombone career was non-existent. It was my trombone career was stamped out by my mum very early on. So it was straight to the saxophone. And
why was it not a
because
thing?
I think it was there were saxophones as well in that film.
Yeah,
you know, less strong a role, but they also existed. And I think I had a plastic one,
right?
Saxophone. So there was an element already in existence, but you know, the next thing I knew, I was playing the saxophone.
That's good news.
Which is fun, it's quite fun.
Yeah.
I have quite a good time playing the saxophone.
It's easy.
It's dead easy.
Yeah.
It's dead easy. People joke about this all the time, but it's actually true. It's really, really
it's
easy.
True, it's literally a very easy instrument to play.
How are you getting on with it there with how
let's do it release. I think I might have just made it up what I said. Home video.
So the Glenn Miller story is just a normal film.
Just a normal film.
Nothing significant.
No, it's correct. 1954.
But it was great that it was made.
Music.
You know, nonetheless.
Yeah, it's really cool.
It's a great film.
It's a great film.
So what happened to make you realise that playing the saxophone was something you were going to do all the time?
I'm not sure if it was playing music in some shape or form,
right,
or being involved in music in some shape or form that I wanted to do all the time. I think it was the only thing I was reasonably good at.
Yeah.
I was quite shit at school.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have very good grades.
I can well believe that.
And I was headed for the pits. So
of a show.
Of a show. That didn't really work out either because I was also crap at doubling. So that never worked out. But I think it was never a sort of I think I should do this. It was more like, well, this is happening.
Right. Okay.
You know. Was it similar for you?
Yeah, exactly the same. Right. I just never felt I was good at anything else.
No.
And that was the main driving force behind doing it.
Right.
Circumstantial
being crap at life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And like you said with grades, like...
Not crap at life, crap at school.
Crap at
very
school.
Very different things.
Yeah.
Very different
thing. Also, I went to school quite close to the Royal Northern.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, so I'd harboured a lifelong dream to go there.
It was there, like, mental.
Yeah, exactly. Interest. Exactly that, yeah. What was your school's music department like?
My school's music department was very small, but headed by a fine, very driven young music teacher called Linda Bryce, and it was very open minded and very liberal. I think when I went there at the beginning, there was a really, really profoundly strange, batty old woman leading the department. Who had a horrible habit of sort of, like, if someone was misbehaving, she'd sit them on their knee in front of the class and do some kind of horrible Freudian mother shaming.
Oh my god!
Thing.
That
yeah.
sounds horrific.
So I think she retired and died. In a way that Freud would be proud. So she left and enter Mrs. Bryce, who
yep.
was. He was just fantastic, you know. And very inspirational. So.
Did you go straight to academy? No.
No.
You didn't?
No.
Because you were a postgrad.
I was a postgrad.
Because I know that because I was there as a postgrad when you were there.
Yes.
So that seems like a really
exactly.
particularly stupid error.
No. You do yourself
one thing
injustice.
I knew about your history.
I went to the University of Strathclyde.
Right.
To do a degree in applied music. I don't know what the applied bit. I never knew what the applied bit meant.
Right.
Just a music degree.
Yeah.
And
is it like an academic music?
No. I think that's what the applied bit is.
Right.
As opposed to being an academic music degree, it was performance based.
Yeah.
So, which was cool actually. Which and as of course it sadly doesn't exist anymore, because during my time there, the powers that be, the University of Strathclyde, deemed it not suitable, not,
right.
not worthy to exist. So there was a lot of campaigning and placarding outside,
yeah.
and which took up my third year there.
Wow.
Trying to get them to stop doing it, and they did it anyway because they're wankers. But so it doesn't exist anymore, quite sadly.
Is there no music there?
There's no music. Or it might be, I don't know, there might be something quite watered down, but
right.
I don't think so anymore. But I was there with some very interesting people. I was with Corey Dick, he was in my year.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
And the great Peter Johnson, who's amazing, based in Glasgow, and a bunch of folk musicians. It was a really, like, it was a very diverse
yeah.
bunch of people. So it was a very, very full sort of musical education. It wasn't.
Yeah.
And I had a great saxophone teacher called Brian Molly, who's badass.
Yeah. What's his name?
Brian Molly.
Right.
Amazing tenor player. Like, a real... If there was ever any doubt in anyone's mind if I wanted to do music, he was one that would
oh, nice.
Like, expel any of that.
Yeah.
Just, like, an amazing musician, amazing educator, and a lovely, lovely human.
Yeah.
I think you need her. Everyone's got a teacher like that, don't they? A teacher that you have a very formative, strong relationship with, right?
Yeah, I think you need that if you want to do something that's going to take like your entire life to master.
I think so. You need a pinner, an idol.
Yeah.
You know. You must have.
I have one. Andy Scott.
Andy Scott.
Andy Scott. That's a pretty big time. He's my idol as a saxophone player and as a human, the way he treats people, the way he behaves,
yeah.
The way he conducts himself, like everything about Andy.
Yeah.
Even my beard is an attempt to replicate his beard.
I mean, it's a marvellous beard.
Yeah, it's a shame.
This is the first time I've seen you with a beard.
It's been a big lifestyle change. James Madron taught me how to have a beard.
Taught you?
Yeah. At Tom Taylor's wedding, he sat me down and was like, I don't know how he got onto it, but I'm eternally grateful. He taught me about like I basically would either shave or not shave.
So what? How do you do it?
He would introduce me to the idea of just shaving your neck here, you know.
So you never touch this?
Or the sides, like what do you call it? Like from your jawbone, like the jaw, the cheeks,
thingy jaws. They're like, what's that? What's that like? Those like big. Like if you had, what's that like? Is that like mutton chops or something? If you had those,
is it?
Yeah.
Sure. Oh yes, that is what it is. That like beard. That's like a Western.
Yeah.
Vibe.
It's like a yeah.
This is I shave the sides.
Yeah.
But like to like a centimeter, just so it doesn't get really bushy.
Yeah.
And then the middle, I just leave completely. And then the neck. This is what James taught me.
The neck
was making a line across. One neat line at the bottom of it, you know, as a basis.
Yeah.
It was at Academy.
Let me have a look there.
You know, so this is all shaved. And then this bit is left. So I just shave it like a perfect, you know. This is how it started. James told me, like, if you want to look neat and have a beard, shave this neck and leave a line.
I think I need some tips. I mean, look at me.
Oh, my goodness. How often do you shave?
Every...
That looks like every day.
That's like every 2 days.
I can't imagine you with a beard.
I can't imagine with a beard. I'm too, like, sort of pasty.
I just can't pull it off not having one. I look like a bitch. So...
I know how I feel every day.
Oh man. So what drove you to want to come to London to the academy? Did you audition anywhere else?
The lights, the music, yeah. The show business.
Yeah. Big time. The gigs.
The gigs, the bountiful gigs, yeah. The corporate events. I came to London for the function.
The Christmas
scene.
Parties, yeah.
I came to London because it seemed like the next thing to do. I had an amazing time playing in Jazzgo, yeah. Glasgow.
Jazzgo, great.
Glasgow has an amazing jazz scene.
Yeah.
The best I've come across outside London, like yeah. By a country mile. It's like it's. But there was a time when I was there that I was. I was up in Scotland over Christmas reminiscing with a friend Brody. We were thinking about like time in Glasgow when we were like 19-ish, and there was like you could go out and play at like a student-led jam like 6 out of 7 nights a week.
Wow.
In town, which is amazing.
That's
you know?
Incredible.
So London seemed like the next logical step. So I did 3 years in Glasgow and then I came.
Where did you audition?
Academy in Guildhall.
And you got into Academy, that was just a natural
choice.
That
seemed, I'd met Nick Smart doing the National Youth Jazz Orchestra for Scotland.
Yeah.
And I'd spoken to him then prior to applying. So he seemed like a lovely man. So that swayed that a bit.
Yeah.
It was also full of some amazing people.
Yes.
That I knew about at the time. And
like me.
Like you. You know how you said that we said that the Royal Northern was your Mount Olympus?
Yeah.
Well, your mind. Your mind.
Oh, my God.
I didn't go to the Royal Academy of Music. I went to the Royal Academy of Cope.
Yeah.
It's just
you. You just want to sit next to me and absorb every day.
That's all I did. We had some great times.
We had some wonderful times. I'm trying to think of what any of those times were.
No, they've all been...
What did we do?
Who did we play with? We did quite a lot of Octet stuff. We did quite a lot of Post-Grad Octet.
Post-Grad Octet, of course.
I mean, we only had a year overlap. We didn't have a full two.
We didn't get a great... But it was...
But, you know, play some good music.
I enjoyed Pete Churchill did a 2-hour class on how to tape your parts properly.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
like how to use a credit card to draw bar lines.
Yes,
you know,
credit card. Yeah,
real
yeah.
world advice.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was a belt
oyster
for that
card,
trip.
Oyster
cards.
Yeah, oyster hand.
Yeah,
that's very. Yeah, that's very good. I'm just trying to think, have I done that? Have I used a credit card to draw bar lines in my real life?
I've used his taping advice a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I've taped many a part.
Using
and
Churchill
enjoyed
technique.
It. Churchill, and it really changed my confidence.
Yeah.
My confidence in being able to use sellotape
okay.
changed a lot.
It's a rough gig.
Yeah. Quick to punish.
Mm.
So, you enjoyed Academy?
I did. I had a marvellous time. I really did.
Who are you spending most of your time with? With, like, teachers? Lessons?
Teachers? I think I had most of my time with Ian Bellamy. Who's just the most remarkable man.
Yes.
He's like a character out of Alice in Wonderland.
Even his saxophone is, because he's got an eye on the back.
He's got an eye on the back.
Stares at you.
Yeah. Or slowly stares at his navel the whole time. Amazing musician, amazing human, and a very, very, very inspirational chap. So I most admired with him. I saw a lot of Sam Sultan, a lot of Julian Siegel, and a lot of James Alsop. I mean, like, what a bunch, you know?
Yeah.
It was deadly. There's some amazing...
Dream team,
really, yeah. You know. It's getting railed by tenor players.
Yeah, that'll do it. And then what happened after you left college?
When I left college, I think I probably entered the phase that most people do, or I hope most people do, of mild crisis, because you realise that your entire life this is going to be, no one's going to pay you to oyster card your bar lines, or take parts, or write creative music for...
It's a funny thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because although music college was an incredibly fun experience, and I don't mean this as a direct criticism, but a lot of the stuff doesn't prepare you for life as a professional musician.
No.
It prepares your playing
for working
as a freelance, but not so much the rest of it.
It's like going to the most marvellous party and you're there for X how many years and you're playing so much music and you're meeting so many interesting people and you think that you've been at the party so long that you just don't remember life not at the party. And then you get turfed out of the party into the cold rain and you've got to try and get the bus home and you're waiting at the bus stop. The bus never comes and you remember you don't have a home.
Yeah.
And then you've got to build from there.
Yeah. I wish
you weren't
I'd
kids.
Have yeah.
It sucks.
I'd have loved to have taken a break after my first degree and gone out into the world for a bit.
That's
seen it, you
that's
know, and then gone I'd have appreciated going back to Academy so much more. Mainly for how much time you have to practice.
That's
to
it.
Just
you
do
got, yeah,
stuff, you
yeah,
know.
You got loads of time.
To just be creative and write tunes and have very
good.
When
that's what you're doing, who thinks about the future? Who thinks about when that doesn't exist?
Yeah.
Because that's a very scary thought. So you just don't think about it.
No.
You know? And you just hope you build up enough contacts and things when you're there that, you know, you've got something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like we said, move to London for the function scene.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Build that up when you're at college. So after I left, I guess after I left college, I scuppered around desperately trying to get a teaching job.
Yes.
Because I wasn't a doubler, so that wrote off.
Did you just not enjoy?
No, I've always been someone who's not at all interested in anything that's like
just not exciting.
It's just not interesting to me. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like quite obsessively not interested in things.
Yeah.
So if I was like. If it was like a case of I should probably play the flute to get some gigs or whatever, I'd have to really, really, really desperately want to do those gigs in order to play the flute. I don't think I ever really did.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it was never something I'd done at school or historically, so I didn't have any facility.
Right.
Like previously.
That's a hard place to come from.
It is, because you're killing at it. You're pretty good. You're pretty nifty with all the bells and
very
whistles.
Very kind of you. I learned the clarinet when I was 12. My teacher, Jim Muirhead.
Jim Muirhead gave me a little poem from the Woodman Exchange.
Fantastic.
I met him at the Woodman Exchange.
In Bradford.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He loves that very place. Briefly.
Yeah.
And he was like, and I was like, alright, well, nice to meet you.
Where did you live?
London. And he was like, do you want a lift? I was like,
to London?
Yes. yeah, he gave me a lift to London from Bradford. Oh, after meeting him for like 5 minutes, he was like, I'll jump in. I'm heading down now to see my nephew or something.
Oh, of course, yeah, it's crumbs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's
so
incredible.
Yeah, we had an amazing time listening to Buddy DeFranco on cassette.
Sweet.
On this drive down.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. He's a lovely man.
Yeah.
But I've not met him since. It was just this once.
That's
really
incredible.
Concentrated, like, 6 hour car journey.
Yeah.
This guy I'd only just met.
That's beautiful.
That's fantastic.
There you go. I saw him last month. He's,
how is he?
He's good. He's just very he's very Glaswegian.
Yeah.
I feel like I didn't.
Is he not from East Kilbride or something?
Yeah,
like, all musicians are from East Kilbride.
Yeah, he taught me for 8 years at school.
Oh wow!
But I don't feel like I really met him until I was an adult and
right.
he could swear freely.
Right. Yeah.
And then
yeah,
it was like, oh, I see.
You're really angry.
Yeah. Yeah, you're really angry about everything. Great, yeah. Jim made me learn clarinet.
Right.
I didn't want to, and he was like, he had no regard for my personal opinion whatsoever, and just kept saying, if you want to work, you're going to have to learn it.
Do you think that's because you didn't have a beard?
Yes. In hindsight, I don't need it now, because I have this beard.
Back then, you really were.
Back then, yeah. Oh man, exactly. So I, like you say about the facility, and when I went to the Northern, I kind of, and then I did principal, I split for a while, saxophone and flute.
Mm.
And I, starting the flute at age 18, with no, like, I just think of them as childhood memories.
Right.
And I had none. So it was the hardest thing I'd ever done.
Right,
you know,
right.
It was absolutely brutal. And then I realised, not enough to just be practising, I would split my principal study hours and get a good teacher and really go to town on it for 4 years. And that anything less, and I just wouldn't ever be any good.
Mm.
And it really took that to be able to do anything. And then the clarinet, I didn't play at all. When we got to Academy, the very first project in the big band, it was all written on bass clarinet, and Nick Smart just was like, Rob, you play bass clarinet, right? So I was like, yeah, of course I do. And then, of course, I knew Academy would give me a bass if I said I could play it.
Oh, yeah,
and I'd never played it before. I took it home. The first day was pretty rough. But then playing like Barry sax, tenor sax, B-flat clarinet, you kind of have all the skills. The fingering is the same as the B-flat clarinet. Came together, you know, in a couple of days. Which is only because of a...
I don't think I have that switch in my brain. I don't know what it is. I don't know. Like, I've tried. Like, I've been put in situations where, like, I've had to do it.
Yeah.
And it's got to the gig or the thing I have to do. And it's got to the day and I'm just like, yeah, I can't do this.
Take your soprano sax.
And I don't... I think I used to feel a bit nervous about it, but now I don't really care.
Yeah.
And it's not like I have a beard.
Yeah.
It's just, I was just never really my thing. I have an awful lot of respect and stand in awe at people that can do it really well. But because I've never quite got my head around it.
Yeah, I feel bad because it's not me that's good at it. It's the situation I was put in.
Right.
You know, and then having a teacher that made me do it against my will. That now every time I see Jim, I know this sounds stupid, but I'm always like, thank you so much.
Yeah.
My whole career.
It's super handy.
When
it's
I got
so
to
handy.
London, the one of the best parts of my whole playing career was everyone assumed I'd done classical clarinet at the Norbert, because all the jazz musicians I knew, nobody knew there was a contemporary saxophone thing, that it even existed, or that it was a course. Mm. And I don't know, I think Nick Smart even thought the same thing. So for the first couple of years, I was getting only clarinet gigs.
Really?
Yeah, it was fantastic. And like Laura Judd, Elliot Galvin, all those dudes, they all thought I'd studied clarinet.
Yeah.
So I'd play like small group things with Elliot on clarinet, and he'd write incredibly difficult music, and I'd get the parts, and they'd be way out of my reach, but I practiced them hard enough that on the gig I could play it, and then the legend would grow that like, or I could show up, you know. That, I didn't tell anyone that I wasn't sight reading. And over a couple of years, my clarinet playing picked right up to the same standard as the saxophone. And then I blew it one day. I went for a play with Laura Judd, and I took my soprano. And when I got there, she was like, "Where's your clarinet?" And I was like, "Well, I'm kind of a saxophone player." And she seemed really gutted. And I knew, I didn't realise that they thought I was a clarinet player. You know, I just went along and played what they told me. And then the cat was out of the bag, which was a real shame. If I'd have known that they thought I was a clarinet player, I would never, ever have given them... I'd never have told anyone that I played saxophone. It's funny, though. When I interviewed Mark Lockhart, Mark thinks I'm a clarinet player.
Really?
Yeah. Because I did a Chaos recording on clarinet, and he was like advising, listening, all that stuff. And
wow,
I know, it's really fun. It's like a whole alter ego. But Mark's one of the few remaining
people that think you are.
Individuals.
So are you letting it percolate with Mark?
Big time.
Okay.
In case he ever needs a clarinet player.
That's it.
There's too many saxophone players in London.
Exactly.
As soon as I'm a saxophone player, my career's over.
Yeah.
God, I just hope this conversation's been recorded.
I know, that would be a disaster. So what projects have you been involved in that have been particularly... No, I know what I wanted to ask you. What was your first teaching job?
What was my first teaching job?
Oh, I taught...
Scrabbling around in London.
I taught in a school in Brixton. It was an academy school. And it was... It's hard.
Yeah,
it's hard work, right? You know. There's not a great sense of community. It can be quite lonely. The kids were great, but the teachers were not out of class. You got quite a lot of stress.
Yeah.
It felt like you were fighting a losing battle.
Yeah.
Which it can often do. So
that's the worst, when teachers make the kids feel guilty for leaving, and then they don't want to come to their lesson.
It's emotional abuse.
Yeah. Yeah,
it is.
Yeah,
you know, it's not. It's taking complete advantage, and it happens. I still see it loads
as well.
It's not cool. I've started calling people out. It's like, you can't do that.
Yeah,
this is.
It's hard enough to learn an instrument.
Yeah.
Already.
Yeah. Exactly. So I was there for a couple of years, and then I taught with Canada Music Service, who I still teach with now, who are great. I've been teaching privately, and I've got some stuff up at Haberdashers now, which is great. With Tom Taylor and John Austin, your friends and mine.
That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And that jazz course, or the Habs jazz thing, has grown loads with you and Tom.
It's become something of an obsession, which is very strange.
There's a summer school.
There's a summer school.
There's a Twitter account.
There's a Twitter account.
There is
a Twitter account, and a jazz summer school, which we ran for the first time last year. At the end of August, we had 35 boys and girls making a lot of music for a week.
Absolutely fantastic.
Which is super cool. And hopefully we're back this year with 2 weeks at the end of August. Yeah, one for like say 11 to 14, then the second week for 15 to 18.
Yeah.
And then, fingers crossed, a gig at the Pizza Express at the end of it for the older course.
That's incredible.
Yeah. It's very exciting. But there's, we've built a little community out there, and the students are amazing. And the, like, there's something in the air. There's a real community. You know, like, you know, a music can get that way. It can get quite cliquey, and you can identify yourself by it. And I think once enough people do that, once the community's been built, you're like, particularly teenagers, they find a home there, you know, and that's hugely exciting.
Yeah.
And jazz is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, jazz has
changed your whole life.
Yeah. It's just, you know, and like,
I mean, God knows what we would be doing.
To
the pair of us without the opportunity to learn a musical instrument.
Absolutely, yeah. But you know, but and I think you know, and I think teaching improvisation to that age group is, they have so much to say.
Yeah,
they have so much. It's such a sort of vivid period of your life. You know, you have so much to on your mind. You have so much to get off your chest.
Yeah,
you have so much.
Yeah,
it makes for very exciting music.
The one time, one of the most mentally challenging periods of my life was just a hernia. Not a massive problem,
right,
by any means, except that it stopped me playing.
How long is this?
3 months at the Northern, in my second year. And it really made me realise how much I depend on my instrument for, like, sanity.
Yeah.
You know, to vent and to pour your emotions into something. You know, I've had bigger hardships that I coped with much more, like, with much more dignity.
Mm.
But
yeah,
I still be able to play the saxophone.
Yeah, sure. No, you need it. It's, you know, you identify yourself by it. It's a part of you.
Yeah. Let's talk about what you're doing now.
Right now?
Yeah. Projects.
Okay.
In the vicinity of now.
Projects in the vicinity of now. Well, I have a duo with Will Glazer, the brilliant Will Glazer, who is just a tremendous musician. He's a drummer, a percussionist, and he and I have been working together for the past, it must be like 2 or 3 years now, and in that kind of odd drum and saxophone kind of lineup. I think it came about because we had like a trio play, and like the third member, the conventional third member that would make it into an actual viable band didn't turn up.
That's how Troika started.
Really?
Callum Gourlay was supposed to play bass. He missed the one rehearsal. This is perfect. It's incredible. Yeah, I know. Bam.
So we've been doing that, and we're due to record some stuff next year. This year, it's 2018. Man, this year we're going to record some stuff this year. So that's good. So Will and I'll start doing some more stuff with that. I play with Misha Mulapavado.
Yes,
in his sextet. He's doing really
BBC
well.
Young generation artist.
BBC this, that, and the next thing.
He got that. I heard you guys on Radio 3 a while ago when I was driving home from school.
Oh yeah.
One like Friday night.
Oh yeah.
Had like a really long day, quite a difficult like primary school job, you know, right, and I was driving home, and then I heard you guys on Radio 3. I was like a mixture of pride and profound pain. I was like, oh God, where did it all go wrong?
We've all been there, and we'll continue to be here. So that's good. He's an amazing musician. Like a proper universal genius, you know,
yeah.
Like just a mind.
Yeah.
And it's very exciting to them, it's hugely exciting to the music, you know. He's a nice guy. So that's a cool band.
He's a great person to be hanging about with.
Because
he's organised.
He's pretty on it.
Yeah.
You know, he's he's got a strong vibe. It's all about having a strong vibe, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think album after album or gig after gig, he seems to be getting much more comfortable in his own skin, you know, which is
it takes a long time.
Takes ages.
Yeah, I mean, if you're good by the time you're 40, you've done a good job. That's my attitude.
That's in perspective, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's hard. You know, it's,
I mean, Mike Brecker's first album, he was 39, I think.
Was he?
He was really late. No earlier than 37.
No way.
I forget. Yeah.
I don't know his album.
I know, that's a very nice template on which to plan your career, you know? It's not all over if you haven't, like, by the age of 30, released 7 solo albums, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, which takes the pressure off me for next year.
Yeah.
Because I've actually had them in the diary every other month.
Yeah.
Solo record. Session,
yeah.
Big Ten. I was panicking.
Have you released any albums of your own yet?
I released a little online EP back in 2013.
Right.
With a band I had then called Seafarers, which was like,
I remember that.
Which is like Lauren Kinsella and Sam Rapley and Tom McCready and Sam Watts and Scott Chapman. That was a really great band. I had a really good time doing that. And we did a bunch of gigs around, except we've not done something in like a couple of years. Except just the other day I picked up the phone and started making the formative steps to recording an album. So,
oh, cool.
It looks like September or October we'll be heading.
Wow.
Studio words. Maybe with a slightly, I've not quite worked out exactly who or what, but
yeah.
I feel much better that there's a rough date and a rough timescale.
Yeah.
So
totally.
And the writing started. So so that feels a lot better, actually.
Yeah.
You know, I've been meaning to do that for a long time.
Yeah.
And it's just a case of picking up the phone. But I do far too much thinking and not nearly enough doing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I never, you know. It's like, yeah, record an album. Of course it'd be a great idea to record an album. There's no reason not to record an album.
No.
Or, you know.
Yeah.
But I'll probably just won't do anything about it. You know.
Yeah.
We were saying that earlier, the immediacy of other parts of life take over, you know, like, this needs my attention right now,
yeah.
And this is really important,
yeah.
And that happens quite a lot, and so you just do those things, and then never do the things that are going to take a year to do, because
yeah.
That's crazy. But it's not crazy, it's sensible.
Of course.
So I'm excited about that, I feel good about that, I feel really good about that.
And you play in a big band?
Oh, I play in the Patchwork Orchestra, yeah.
We've just
recorded an album.
Oh, nice. Who runs that?
It's like a sort of cooperatively run thing, which is a logistical nightmare if it's like 19 people. So
yeah.
So it's like big band size, except there's like a, there's maybe like a panel of three brains.
Ooh, I like that.
Who are the three?
Are you allowed to say their names?
I'm not sure, actually. I say three people, but it's probably bigger than that. Like, I know Misha does a lot of work towards it. Yusuf Narchin, he's really on it with making gigs and things.
I like Yusuf. He's got a lovely voice.
He has a lovely voice. Come on, this.
Yeah. I will.
Just for the voice.
Just for the voice,
monologue.
Yes.
Just get him to read like
yes, that's a great idea.
Like
short stories series. I'd love to have Yusuf do audiobooks for me.
Fantastic. Yes,
that'd be great.
We'll call him afterwards.
Yeah, let's do it. Just to hear
go to his voice. Bring a sleeping bag. Give us bedtime stories.
Read us another story, Yusuf.
And it's all original, so we all write for that.
Oh wow!
So we did an album of tunes there at the end of last year, and just like right before Christmas, up at Era Studios in Hampstead, which is really cool.
Amazing. And how do you pay for that? Does everyone?
I think everyone's chipping in.
Yeah,
everyone's chipping in. We had a little bit of funding from Peter Whittingham.
Lovely! That's cool.
Which is amazing.
Yeah,
and certainly would
like
be possible to do a lot
award.
Of things with that.
So
I'm not sure when that'll sort of turn around, but it has been recorded and will be
great
at some time.
Yeah.
So you know. It's all good. It's a nice variety. Different bits and bobs.
That's what you want.
I guess so.
Yeah.
I think we can't complain. It's pretty exciting. But
here's a question for you.
Hit me.
Tell us about your hobbies away from the saxophone. Are there any?
This
what do you
where,
do to relax?
This is where we all realise I'm a hollow, boring individual. Profoundly boring man.
Profoundly boring man.
Absolutely. That'll be my like epitaph.
Yeah.
Grave.
Yeah. That can be the title of this show.
Get it, please. Episode such and such. Not even my name. Just a profoundly boring man.
Yeah, that'll
the boringest
do.
Man in
that'll
jazz.
Do. Yeah.
No, What do I do? I really like reading.
Great.
I work a lot with Tom Taylor, who has a voracious appetite for literature.
Yes.
So we do. We talk about books and.
Tom and I used to do the same at college. We used to read the same books so that we could just chat about it.
It's great. I love books are fantastic.
I was faster than him back then.
You were fast. He's
I used to
really
struggle.
Fast.
I would just have to wait for him. You're right, he got more and more obsessed. Yeah, he would put me to bed.
He's
right
that laughing me now.
What kind of books do you like to read?
I really like books about like fiction about like people and situations.
Yeah.
And like not like I've never been like a genre reader, you know, like thrillers and horror and things. Like but really good books more about characters, I suppose, than plots.
Right.
Like, have you ever read any Iris Murdoch?
No, none.
She's really great for just a million characters and very interesting, strange situations.
Yeah.
And it's almost like every book's the same, except no matter how, like, she's written, like, maybe 26 or something. And, but it just seems like, every single time I know what I'm going to get, but I have an insatiable appetite for it. It's like quite, I guess that's the thing. It's like, it's the same thing with like music or all arts, I guess. Like all the really good people just have that one thing.
Yeah.
And they just regurgitate the one thing over and over again. And it's because it's so good.
Yeah.
You're like, I'll have that again.
Yeah.
In a different, slightly different, you know, form.
Yeah.
And that Bill Frisell thing, he was like, everyone just has like one soul.
Yeah.
And you just, I could listen to Bill Frisell until like.
I'm going through all his albums at the moment.
Having a good time.
From the very start, you know, chronologically. Because I've never really checked it out that much.
You're having a good time.
Yeah.
The start is pretty. Pretty. He's got his elbows out at the start, doesn't he? He's pretty free.
There's some really weird stuff going on right now.
Yeah. It's funny when you have like that, and then like look at him now, and he's like a country musician.
Yeah.
And he's just it's like a real distillation of like. And it gradually, you know, like from like those early ones, like Before We Were Born, you put that with like Zorn on it and things, like Wayne Horowitz and all that stuff. It's really like aggressive and intense, and sort of just gradually trickles down into this weird kind of Twin Peaksy thing in that sort of middle quartet with who's that? Like Hank Roberts, Dermot Driscoll,
I've not
and Joey
got
Barrett.
To any of that yet.
That's all decadent.
I mean, like
now he's like it's just like. Rocking out,
yeah.
You know, or like, you know, it's just killing. It's just a real like.
I'm in the like early bitonal phase.
Oh, cool!
Like, there's a few tunes that are in clip, like two different keys, you know, that just run through it and don't really interact with each other. But some of that I've been really enjoying.
Okay, yeah.
I forget. There's examples. There's an album on YouTube on Spotify. Which I know is the devil, but I think if you type his name in and scroll down to the very first album,
like early frizz.
The very frizz, yeah.
Early frizz.
The star.
Yeah.
He's my eyes
of everyone. He's my number one.
Why?
I love Phil Cavell. I think it's just heartbreakingly honest. There's no.
If I was a really pretentious knob, yeah, I would say that Bill's never played a note he didn't mean.
Classic. It's a beautiful thing to say. I think it's very.
I like that there's no chops in it. At least the bits I've heard, there's no shredding.
He's beyond that. I don't think that's what music's about.
No,
I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know the guy. I'm putting words in his mouth, but
yeah.
I don't know. His music has a more. It moves me more than an awful lot of other music.
Yeah.
And regularly, no matter what he's playing.
Yeah.
He, as a sideman on his own stuff, he will always get an emotional response from me.
Yeah.
You know, it's like straight for the jugular every time.
That's all you can ever hope for.
I know, right? Just amazing. Just yeah. Great sound, amazing tunes.
Yeah.
Strong guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, books. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Books are good.
Books are good.
Yeah. Do you read much now?
I used to read an obsessive amount of, literature about space history. Space exploration.
Does that not dark you out?
No, I love it. That's my second, if I could get a degree in specifically manned space exploration. Without the maths, that's the bit I can't do. I'm not much of a physicist. But the album I recorded last year is Gods of Apollo, and it's all using historical audio. I wanted to know everything that you could possibly know, so that no one could
space.
About the history and the reasons and the order and the space race and the Russian, the Soviets, and the Americans,
really? Right? Okay.
And that whole era, the Cold War, understanding it well enough that people who lived through it wouldn't be like, "What's this kid doing? This makes no sense," or things were in chronological order. And anyway, so I did a lot of reading for that, and now I just exclusively learn Russian.
Really?
That's it. Because now, if you want to fly in space, you have to speak fluent Russian. All the American astronauts speak Russian.
Would you go to space?
Yes.
Would you actually?
Definitely. And I've got the Russian skills to get there. I want to, be in the Soyuz, and if you want to fly in a Russian ship, you have to be able to speak fluent Russian.
Really?
Yeah. So that's the kind of, I know I'm a big nerd, but the level of obsession is that high.
No, it's pretty cool.
That's my one and only hobby. I just sit at home and learn Russian and read in Russian. Penguin published some books that dual text, English on the left and the Russian on the right, so you can read through and pick up a lot.
When did you start learning Russian?
In April, after I went. And just seeing the symbols and the alphabet, they use the Cyrillic alphabet, so it's all different. And it makes it look harder, it's less approachable. People can't look over your shoulder and guess what a word might mean, because they can't fundamentally read the letters, I quite like the mystery of it, so. I just realised, apologies listeners, there is a crying child in Cafe Nero.
It's happy tears. Almost definitely.
Yeah.
I'm not too sure what's gone down over there, but it's not looking good.
We have to end the show because of the kid. But yeah, Russian. So the reading
really
has been supplemented. I think when I get insanely fluent, I'll come back to reading in English.
Right.
But at the moment, I just feel like it's a waste of time to read English words. I feel like I'm missing the chance,
Really? That's really cool. That's an exciting thing. You're at an exciting part in your development.
I think it's...
Development.
Yeah, it's
your rebirth.
Yeah, exactly. I always felt like I could never learn a language. Until... I don't know what changed. No, I know what changed. It was realising that all the Americans were learning it in their 50s and their 40s. So when it was suddenly the space shuttle stopped flying.
So you're everyone a spring chicken.
Yeah, exactly. And I realised okay, maybe you can be fluent if you don't learn as a kid. It's not over for me.
Yeah.
I have a student who's studying psychology. at university, and when I told her, she was like, you are way too old to be learning a language. She was like, your brain is done. It's like, oh damn,
what fun.
Yeah,
what fun.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah,
she sounded like a scream. Sign me up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think going to space, man, I think I'd jump out. I'd be like, I don't want to be here. I want to be in Cafe Nero.
Yeah, well, we're supposed to be on Earth.
Yeah, that's what it is. I'm not great at flying either, though, so I can't get on a plane. I can get on a plane, but I just don't like it.
I came back from Iceland on Tuesday night.
Oh, yes, of course. After your
aborted landing. It's 80 mile an hour winds.
What?
So we got over the runway and the plane was lurching violently.
Oh, wrong.
I know, it was absolutely like stomach turning, because you could just imagine the wings clipping the floor, you know. And the pilot, he aborted and went back up and then said, like, I'm checking for weather at other locations. And when it was that like Storm Eileen or whatever,
right?
And it was just everywhere. So we just went for another crack. He just brought it in again.
And we were fine.
It was really exciting.
Exciting.
Terrifying.
Mostly terrifying.
Yeah. When we finally touched down, the woman in front of me burst into tears and started screaming. I thought I was going to die. She was yelling, I could see my grandma, I could see Nan, I was, you know, it was really, that was the best bit.
Oh, I just can't do it.
Yeah.
I just can't do it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean...
It was so impressive. I went on the EasyJet feedback. Took me like 10 minutes, and when it was like, how was your pilot, like, nailed it. Any other feedback, he nailed it. I was like, this dude, he was the man.
Absolutely, you know? F*** that bitch in front.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so cool. Don't let them on your plane.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, I'm actually getting on a plane next week, and I'm not. I'm just dreading.
Where do you want to, where are you
just going to Edinburgh.
Get to? Ah, okay.
I'm just ready.
Yeah.
That'll be fine. You know, it's just like, that's not meant to be up there.
Yeah.
I should be south of here.
Yeah.
You know. So flying's not one of my hobbies.
No.
And I don't think ever will be.
No.
Tube, also not great on the tube, which is a problem for living in London.
Yeah.
Not great on the tube. It stopped. I was on like it was like a couple of Saturdays ago, and I was going to meet my dad.
Yeah.
By Green Park Station, and the tube got stuck for 40 minutes between Bond Street and Green Park on a Saturday night.
Oh.
And the tannoy didn't work.
Oh god.
So we had no idea what was going on until we were fucking flipping out.
Freaking out. Yeah. Yeah.
So I was a little bit stuck in the tube.
I was on the Jubilee line when the failed bombing attempt happened.
No.
Yeah. What year would that be? 2005?
Right, yeah.
July 23rd, I think it was. Just a few stations up from where the bomb didn't go off. And I was around, like, West Hampstead, Kilburn area. And the tube stopped. I was with my friend Katia. And we were looking out the window, and there were, like, truckloads of armed police going past, you know, minivans, and
right,
all like,
yeah,
armed
yeah.
to the teeth. And I was like, this is something. And she was like, nah, it's London, it's fine. And then they were just like, the guy, you know, the tannoy, you stopped in Kilburn, and he was like, this tube's been service suspended. She just got off. And then, like before you had iPhones, you, like, go home, and later on, they saw that, like, the bombs luckily hadn't gone off. But then I was like, I told you it was something.
That's fine.
Yeah.
A bit too much to drink or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rowdy night at the Kilburn High Road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... it's been a pleasure.
It's been such a pleasure.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't believe... It's been how long?
Years.
And it feels like only yesterday.
Seconds. It feels
apart
like seconds.
From the beard.
Yes.
And the fact that you no longer look like a... It's been...
Yeah.
It feels like no time has passed. It's
does.
You know, it's just lovely.
Yeah, I love that about life.
And beard.
You know, when you get older and you see people that you haven't seen for a while, then it just feels like nothing.
It's great, man.
Yeah.
It's great. There's less...
no weirdness. When you're young, everything's a bit weird. Everything's a bit
everything
like...
Everything is difficult. Yeah.
You know. For those of you that can't see, I did a really accurate facial description of weird as a youngster. Weird like social interaction.
Yeah. You look like you're just eating some like off yogurt.
Yeah.
Right. It's 4:32. Sam Rapley lives just around the corner.
Yeah, I texted him.
So let's go get a cup of tea.
Shall we?
Yeah.
Done.
Man, what a dude. I love Matt so much. He's such a lucky guy.
He was a nice guy.
He still is a nice guy.
Present tense. When I knew him, he was always a nice guy.
Yeah. Yeah. An outstanding gentleman. Yes. Before we go...
I've been out of band this week, Rob. I've got a band recommendation.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. It's really cool. They're like a brass. I don't know how to describe them, but they're like brass saxophones, drums, bass kind of vibe, but like a bigger band. Have you heard? They're called MFA.
No, I know nothing.
Oh well, check out a song called Sunspat.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you find these guys?
Oh, you know what? You know, Spotify and just related artists. And,
oh, sweet.
Yeah, it's when the drums come in. It's a bit of a head twirler because you think you know where the beat is, and then the beat is somewhere totally different.
I love when that happens, and it only really works the first time.
Well, no, this one it works every time.
Never fails.
Yeah, I've become a bit obsessed with it. Like listening to that, the beginning on repeat, like over 100 times, trying to feel it. I can't get it. I think it's been too long since music college. So.
I've tried to spell it. Oh, I see what it is. It's E-M-E-F-E.
That's the one, MFA, I think they say.
I misspelled it and the RNCM Saxophone Orchestra came up, which is actually really bizarre.
Dangerous.
Yeah, I know. Must be targeted advertising.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So, there's some homework.
Yeah.
For us all.
Let me know what you think.
Big time. This looks fun. I'm not going to click enter full site yet. I'm going to save that particular delight until we stop this call.
Yeah.
So,
we could stop recording now and then we'll start recording again when you react.
Oh, I see. What? Like, I could just be like, whoa, damn!
No, let's just let the listeners.
Yeah, let imagination take its course.
Yeah.
I'm going to, let's get talk about it next week. I'm not sure who the guest will be yet. Because there's three or four, potential beauties on the horizon.
Right. Like who?
Femi Colioso. I've been, Femi unfortunately has been a victim of my washing machine repair. Because we were going to have a chat this morning. But podcasts and repairmen, they don't really go hand in hand. Who else? Oh, Ashley Henry. He's got an EP coming out tomorrow. He's a British jazz pianist.
Tomorrow or today?
Tomorrow, as in January the 19th, just to uber clarify. I think that's on Sony as well. So that's quite cool. I'd love to talk to him about that. Johnny Silk, been asking him for a while. Yeah, we kind of keep going, let's make a show, and then we just don't do it. But Matt's lovely accent keeps reminding me of Johnny as well. I'm being very like anti-Scottish here, just like essentially claiming that all Scottish people sound the same.
I'm quarter Scottish, Rob, so...
Wow, I didn't know that.
Do I sound like all the same? I think
Where's this quarter come from?
My grandfather was Scottish.
Incredible. Well, I better be nice then.
Yeah, you better be nice.
So. Also, Izzy Barrett. Ever since I went to her talk on gender equality in jazz back in November, I really wanted to get Izzy to come on because she's...
Is that so that the jazz podcast can be gender equal?
I'd love it to be gender balanced. I mean, there's no excuse for it not being gender balanced, and it's not gender balanced. So So leave it with us. We'll try and, you know, tip the scales. Having Matt Hurd on's done us no favours, frankly.
yeah.
But there you go.
When's Claire going to come on?
Oh, that's a nice question, mate. Yeah, my wife Claire will maybe in the middle of next year. I've got a good feeling that another 18 months might do it.
Okay.
Yeah. And speaking of wives, before we go, your lovely wife Lydia turned 30 since our last show.
She did. Well, actually, it was her birthday was actually in December.
Oh, crumbs.
But we had our party.
How was it?
It was lovely. Yeah, we missed you there, though.
I know, I was...
You were on the attending list.
I know I was, that's the word.
No shows.
I know.
Poor.
Really poor. I was feeling very bad at the time of that party. But I know, you know, probably everyone who didn't go says that. It doesn't carry any weight, does it?
No, nothing.
No. I'm gonna make it up to her, though.
Okay, I look forward to seeing how you do that.
Yeah. It won't be good, whatever it is.
It really won't be.
Right, this is perfect. Dan, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, man.
A monstrous pleasure. You too, my friend. We'll speak to you soon.
Ciao.